Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Lots of stuff going on in the show today. Deborah Tang from St. Elizabeth's Shelter will be here talking about what is happening in the lives of the homeless population of Santa Fe and much more. Naomi Natale will be here joining us by phone, and she will be talking about the Cradle Project, which is a very interesting art project that is going on. And Sig Silber will be talking to us about how on earth you manage growth in Santa Fe. Right now, I would like to welcome joining us in the cafe, Don Scott Carpenter. He is the General Director of the Santa Fe Desert Corral. Welcome.
Good morning.
Great to have you here.
It's good to be back.
Now, the Desert Corral, how long have you been with us here in Santa Fe?
I moved to Santa Fe early July of last summer.
So okay, so
10 months now, I guess.
Barely a year. How's your first year been?
It's been incredible. I've almost experienced all four seasons. And
last week we had the fourth one again.
I heard that. I was out of town.
Snow.
But it's been exciting. Moving into Santa Fe and experiencing the culture and making lots of new friends. I was asked a few weeks ago about, you've moved to Santa Fe, what's going on? And part of it's been the excitement of being in a community where arts are alive and culture. You can walk down the street and speak to people and experience so many different avenues of Santa Fe. So I've just absolutely loved it here.
So let's talk about the Desert Corral. We've had you on the show before, but for those new listeners, what is it? I mean, it's a big, gigantic musical institution here in town.
The Santa Fe Desert Corral is a professional chamber choir that's in residence here in Santa Fe, but of course we bring singers from all over the country twice a year. The summer festival, which lasts about 8 weeks, June, July, and early August, and then our December festival is 2 weeks right before, around the 10th to the 23rd of December. And we present a myriad of performances and types of choral music to the community here in Santa Fe, but we also perform in Taos and Albuquerque.
And the repertoire ranges pretty widely.
It is, and with this coming summer festival, the range is, I think, has even grown wider. We have some staple choral literature that the diehards will absolutely love, and then we have...
What would be an example of that?
We have a wonderful work that we're going to hear one of the composers here in a little bit, but Palestrina. His Mise Pape Marcelli is one of the staples of early Renaissance literature, and it's just a glorious experience at the Cathedral of St. Francis. It's our opening night performance, actually. But then we also have performances in new venues that we've never been to before, including the Center for Contemporary Arts. We're doing a great program entitled Art Plus Music Plus Art, which is contemporary American music, which will be in unique seating arrangement inside of an art exhibit. So it's going to be really a cool experience. I think the literature sort of crosses the gamut between hardcore classical to very 20th and 21st century composers, including one of the selections that we're doing is unprinted, unpublished yet. It's brand new and actually being re-edited as we speak. So, it's 500 years until today.
So is there a specific, there's a audience for certain heavy metal bands and for symphonies and so on. Is there a specific audience that just loves choral music and they can't get enough of it and they always go to all your things?
I think absolutely we have that audience. One of our challenges is to find the other audience who may be afraid of choral music, and they can say, it's really not as, the stigma is not as strong
afraid
as people.
Of.
Yeah, they're not afraid of it, exactly.
How can you be afraid of choral music?
Well, I think some people afraid. I think it's either going to be stiff or stale, or it's not going to have a beat to it, so therefore it's not cool. And I think the program that we have coming up this summer is actually going to find that to be false, that all those things are there. You have to find the right music for you, just like you would if you were listening to any top 40 or rap. It's the right music for you.
We're talking to Don Scott Carpenter of the Santa Fe Desert Corral. So we have some examples of music that we're going to play during this half hour, but you're also going to talk about something that's coming up tonight. I don't think it's the first, but it's one in a series of lectures that you all are putting on.
Yes, this year we're doing our second Chorally Speaking lecture series. 2 weeks ago, we had Maxine Tevenot from Albuquerque presented a lecture. Tonight, John Kennedy, Artistic Director of Santa Fe New Music, will be lecturing about his performance with the Desert Corral this summer. We're doing a joint performance with New Music, all new music of Pert and some interesting pieces at First Presbyterian Church. And he's coming tonight to do a lecture about the music, how he sort of chose the music, what to listen for, and sort of backgrounds of the literature.
We ask this to everybody who comes on claiming to do new music. What is new music? What's new about it, and how is it different from any other kind of newish music, contemporary music?
John is the perfect person to ask that question, and I've actually asked him myself.
You know.
And his answer, which I absolutely think is the perfect answer, is that new music, we think of it written in the 20th and 21st century, but even current composers can write in older forms. So I think new music is music that stretches the ear, stretches the imagination of composers, looking for new ways of sound, new uses of instruments, new marriage of instruments and voices and so forth. It's not just music that's written in the last 10 years. And I think you'll find that in this program.
But it's always in the so-called classical tradition?
20th century music is quote-unquote classical music, but it stretches the imagination, and you know, there is some classical music that does use some rock idioms. It just really stretches the ear in ways that the 19th century didn't do.
Stretched ears are a good thing.
They are a very good thing. They stretch all of us.
So let's listen to the first piece of music, which you have given us.
The first piece we're going to listen to is the Ave Maria, composed by Palestrina. We're performing one of Palestrina's works I mentioned earlier, the Misa Papi Marcelli. We have not recorded that piece yet, so we're going to perform a piece that we recorded on Harmony of the Heavens CD a couple seasons back, entitled Ave Maria.
And so, okay, so let's do a little bit of music education here. What should people listen for in the following piece?
I think they should listen to the way the text is presented. Your Palestrina was at the time of the Council of Trent, and there was this whole thing going on about you need to compose it this way, no, you should compose it this way, I want to compose this way. There was a whole lot of political
ramifications. What time period are we talking about?
This is early 1600s. And so in this piece, you're going to listen to some polyphony, but a lot of just sort of
what's polyphony?
Lots of sounds going on at the same time. At the same time, you're going to find all the music sort of working together in unison, so which is all happening at the same time. Just listen for the beauty of the music in the text in the venue in which it was recorded.
And what language is the text in?
This one will be in Latin.
Oh, okay. So what are they saying?
Ave Maria is just basically Hail Mary. It's one of the staples of the Catholic Church.
Let's take a listen.
All right. Thank you.
Now, that's a Santa Fe Desert Chorale performance.
That is.
And so how do you think, I mean, do you know how it would have sounded different in the 1600s than what we're listening to today?
You know, it's an interesting question, and I think the answer is that no one really knows. Through a lot of research, people have sort of come to this is how it should sound, and even among choral conductors across America and across the world, there are different thoughts on it. I personally think the recording you just heard is as close to probably what Palestrina heard when he created the piece as possible. Clean, using the space, but not oversung, not... you know, we're listening to singers 400 years ago. The voice had not completely developed the voice that we know today. So I think that recording is as close to probably authentic as you can get.
Now, were these pieces, for example, like the Ave Maria by Palestrina, composed with the acoustics of a cathedral in mind?
Yes, especially Palestrina. He was composing at St. Mark's in Venice, so a huge, massive structure. You know, not this particular piece, but a lot of his pieces had choirs in four different balconies around the church, and they would sing to each other. So the part of the space and the spatial ramifications of the works also played into the compositional style. It's a little bit harder to create in most venues, but that was what he was listening to. So you could hear sort of in the recording the space sort of absorbing some of the sound and it sort of flowing. He would have heard that only probably 10 seconds longer with every note.
10 seconds
yeah.
longer,
huge
wow.
Huge acoustics.
Very interesting. And how big a choir do we know, for example, you know, are these, did they, I mean, would you choose, okay, you're in Venice, you're in St. Mark's Cathedral, you've got the whole of Venice to choose from, so presumably it's a big choir with a rigorous selection process just like the Santa Fe Desert Chorale.
Absolutely. You know, in this time period, especially in mainland Europe or in England, it was boy choirs, but in Italy, the women were singing, and so he would audition them just like we audition our own singers for the chorale, and depending on what was going on historically, the size of the choir was sort of dictate on who was in town, who was off at war, who was fighting, whatever was going on at that time. But it was anywhere between probably 20 and 100 at some points. So some of his works are for multi-part choirs and just took larger forces. So absolutely.
We're talking to Don Scott Carpenter of the Santa Fe Desert Chorale. Now, what's the next song that we have?
Well, the next thing we have is a work by Ray Vaughan Williams entitled Wedding Chorus. This is from a recording of the Desert Chorales entitled Soul Speaks. The Vaughan Williams program that we're doing in August is with the Santa Fe Symphony. We're doing three performances of his G minor Mass, the five mystical songs, and then a work by the conductor Jonathan Wilcox entitled Lux Perpetua. And this is just an example of the music of Ray Vaughan Williams as we commemorate the 50th anniversary of his death this year.
And tell us about the piece.
This particular piece is just is somewhat of a simple English setting of some text that have absolutely escaped me at this very moment. But it's Vaughan Williams writing in sort of, his style is somewhat 19th century English is a 20th century composer, so he takes a lot of melodies and thoughts from the countryside of England and sets this particular piece in a most beautiful way that shows the recording sort of speak for itself.
Okay, well let's take a listen. And we're here with Don Scott Carpenter of the Santa Fe Desert Chorale, listening to, this music, it's so sweet.
It is, absolutely. Everything that he composed sort of is, again, it's a wide array of styles, but it all has a somewhat of a simple, and it's not, but a simple way of listening, and just, it's soothing. Even his larger works that we'll hear this summer are just in the same sort of, that squeeze feel, they just make you feel good.
And that's one of the... Now, where do your concerts take place? Do you always have them at the cathedral? I know I went to one over Christmas time that was there.
We do performances at the cathedral, but actually this summer we have 10 venues. We at the cathedral here in Santa Fe, as well as Holy Faith Episcopal Church, but then at the Scottish Rite Temple, the Center for Contemporary Arts. We're doing performances in Albuquerque at the Cathedral of St. John, as well as the Albuquerque Journal Theater, and then a performance at the San Francisco de Assis in Taos.
So mostly cathedrals, except for the great Cathedral of Art, known as the CCA.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking to Don Scott Carpenter. Now, you are giving a lecture yourself called Behind the Music. That's on the 13th of May. And by the way, where is the lecture tonight at 6 o'clock with John Kennedy?
It's at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture up on Museum Hill.
Oh, okay. And so he will be speaking. But then you will be speaking on the 13th of May in a concert, in a lecture called Behind the Music. And you will be talking about, for example, you've got so many different conductors conducting the music. So how do you, first of all, why so many different conductors and how do you choose them?
We have 7 conductors this summer. 3 are guest conductors and 4 are music director candidates. As you may know or may not know, we're searching for our next music director, and part of our process for hiring the next music director is to bring them to Santa Fe and have them work with our singers and present performances to the community. So part of my lecture is going to be talking about the music that they're going to be presenting, but also the conductors, all 7 of them. They were chosen from a process. We had, by the end of the process, we had 70 applicants for the position. We narrowed it down to 11 semi-finalists.
Wow.
And then phone interviews, although it's the process, typical process of job searching. And then we have 4 finalists that we've invited to Santa Fe this summer. So it's very exciting.
Now, do you ever see career change? Like somebody says, you know, I've been conducting symphonies all my life, but now I really want to conduct a chorus. And then they're excluded from a job because they don't have sufficient job experience?
Absolutely. We saw that. We actually saw some of that. It's because we're a professional organization, you know, some of the standards are higher because you want the best and people who have long-term knowledge of what it is they're doing. But absolutely, a lot of people do a certain... I'm case in point. I started out as a choral person, but then did orchestral stuff for a while also, just because it was interesting.
Right.
I think a lot of people in the field do that because they realize they can stretch themselves, and especially with the choral art. A lot of what the chorale is a cappella, but there's so much music with orchestra and other things, you really have to have the background in other literature. So in looking at that, all those things are taken into consideration.
And so you will be speaking, are all the lectures at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture?
Yes, they are. All at 6.
And there'll be one more lecture after that on the 20th of May.
May 20th is the Santa Fe favorite, Matt Tressler, who's been a long-term singer with the chorale and also has been assistant conductor of the Desert Chorale, will be presenting a portion of his doctoral dissertation entitled The Chorale in the Chorale. So
Good heavens. He's
coming to Santa Fe from Miami for that lecture on May 20th. So.
And will there be music? Are you going to play music at any of these...
Absolutely. Last week, or 2 weeks ago at Maxine's, we had both a music and some video. Tonight we'll have some audio from John Kennedy in the new music program. I'm actually doing some PowerPoint listening and some video. And Matt is still sort of finalizing exactly what he's going to do, but I think he's going to be at least playing some examples and reading some of his dissertation.
Don Scott Carpenter is the General Director of the Santa Fe Desert Chorale. We've got one more piece that we're going to listen to on the way out. What is it?
Well, if we could skip to maybe the Bernstein, which actually we're not doing on the Bernstein this summer, but it's a fun, happy morning piece of music to just sort of get us going as, 8:30 and the coffee's still pumping.
Track 4 on the disc?
Absolutely. This is the Overture to Candide by Leonard Bernstein, arranged by Santa Fe local Jack Mano.
Now, what should we listen for in this? This is different from listening to Palestrina or
Von Williams. It absolutely is. This is a transcription of an orchestral work, getting back to that conversation. Where Jack took the works of the violins and all the string, and the winds and the horns, and has set it for 8-part choir. So you're going to listen for the voice actually imitating strings. It's just fun. It's got strong rhythms. It's extremely high in the range at some point, so you have to listen and kind of just be amazed at the flexibility and versatility of our singers and their ability to pull off this piece.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Don Scott Carpenter of the Santa Fe Desert Chorale. People can find more about the Desert Chorale at desertchorale.org on the internet. They can call 988-2282 to speak to somebody there. And also, tickets are, of course, available at the Lenzik box office in Santa Fe, 988-1234. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
And we're going to go out with Leonard Bernstein. And music from the Santa Fe Desert Chorale. I'd like to welcome now Deborah Tang. She's director of St. Elizabeth's Shelter. Bethany Carpenter is from Zia United Methodist Church. And Gail Herling is from the Santa Fe Public Schools Adelante program. Welcome, ladies, to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Now, the occasion of our conversation today is a little celebration that's going on tomorrow night at 5:30. What are you celebrating?
Well, we've had, that's St. Elizabeth's Adelante and Youth Shelters and Family Services have kind of tried to gather together the faith community in Santa Fe to look at the issue of the people who are homeless, who are on the street, especially in the wintertime, facing the elements, and try and create a safe place for them to be so that they don't freeze to death in the winter. But the larger picture is to try and find a one-stop shop so that we can provide services during the day and also then open that up at night so that nobody in Santa Fe has to freeze to death.
Now, how did the winter go?
The winter went very well. We began actually in November trying to find a place for the women and children. There was an overflow shelter at Salvation Army for the men, but the women and children and teenagers had nowhere to go. So several faith organizations, including Temple Beth Shalom and several Christian churches, got together, and we did kind of a round robin thing so that we sheltered women and children from basically December 3rd until the end of March, and no one was turned away.
And that's an unusual winter, I guess, when no one's turned away?
Yes, because until we did this, there was no overflow shelter for the women and children.
Was it a rough winter? I recall, if I'm remembering correctly, January was one of the coldest Santa Fe months I've ever experienced in all the years I've been here.
Yeah, very cold, lots of snow, lots of precipitation. So there was rain at the beginning and so on.
And so tomorrow night you're actually celebrating the success of this, despite the fact that it's a thing that you don't want to celebrate homelessness in any way, but celebrating the success of the shelter. Is this something that everybody's invited to?
Yes. Everyone in the community who is concerned about homelessness and continuing the efforts of providing shelter for all in Santa Fe is invited to this event. It's going to be held at First Presbyterian Church downtown on Grant Avenue. And it's going to be from 5:30 p.m. until 7 p.m. We're going to have a potluck where we provide the paper goods and drinks. And we're also going to have an update. The mayor will be there to talk to us for a few minutes about his perceptions and what he'd like to see happening, which we're very excited about, because the mayor has talked about the city funding a building for us to hold the one-stop shop of services during the day as well as the overflow shelter at night. So we're thrilled about celebrating the over 100 volunteers that have been a part of this through the faith communities, as well as the 14 different churches, synagogue, and then the Taha Mosque, the Pavilion of Hope, and other organizations such as the Interfaith Leadership Alliance, the St. Vincent de Paul Faith at Work, Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center, Esperanza, so many that we can't even mention right now, have been a part of this effort. It's been the most amazing collaboration, and we're still continuing it because our work is not done yet.
What are the challenges that face people in the summer, that face what you are doing in homeless people during the warm months?
Homeless people are still, particularly the people out on the streets, obviously, are still without a safe place to be. Women and children, of course, are most vulnerable, including teens, young teens, older teens. They are vulnerable to predators and to getting hurt. Of course, it's also not healthy because of hygiene sometimes. It's people want to be able to be sheltered. People want to be able to find work, and you know, it's hard to find work when you don't have an address. They want to be able to get the services they need. It's hard to access services when you're unable to get from one place to another, or when you are out on the streets. And so there are many similar issues, but of course one issue that's taken away is that they're not most likely going to get hypothermia. However, there are many cold summer nights, and particularly in our mountains, where some people have to resort to living for fear of being found and harassed.
Bethany Carpenter, you're a pastor with Zia United Methodist Church.
Yes.
Does your congregation step up to the plate on this issue?
Well, we were the first congregation to house the people. We kind of organized all the different faith communities to step up to the plate. We had 10 days in a row where we took the women and children in to our sanctuary, and they stayed there. And then there's another aspect of this that individually people are stepping up to the plate. There was one woman who was homeless, and she actually was in a car accident. A car ran into her. She broke her leg, and one of my members took her into her home. So yes, my congregation steps up to the plate, but we're not the only congregation that has stepped up to the plate, so to speak.
It sounds like an incredible coalition, as Gail was telling us about. But it's St. Elizabeth. St. Elizabeth, is it a religiously based?
No. Matter of fact, it was an interfaith alliance that started St. Elizabeth 21 years ago. And it has been a 501c3 nonprofit, not affiliated with any particular religion or church.
And so St. Elizabeth is, if people want to go and find you, where is the shelter?
Well, our emergency shelter is at 804 Allered Street, and that's just off the intersection of St. Francis and Cerrillos.
Now, are people still dealing with are you still dealing with the whole question of not in my backyard when you talk about opening a so-called one-stop shop?
Yes. I mean, wherever we locate it, it would have to be in